Also, everyone that has a website, I have a great point against the Korean
Chinese.
Huh? Oh, that's great. Yeah, unless you're out of something to say after those are about basically Alex. Chris? Oh, sorry, Chris, okay. Alright, sorry, can we start with the cookies? It's time to cut the cookies. It is. It's 4:49. Yeah, I'm sorry, reading. Sorry.
Olivia Corn, Renee Cornell, Drew Jacob, Omar Din, Osai Aguero, Harris Isman, Rebecca Harris. Matt Edwin, Kate Kaufman, Savannah Lynn, Lee Litchett. Alex Martinez, Sarah Park, Marco Calvo, Jesse Pollard, Sandra Rivera-Villa, Dale Sinai, Mr. Kuchwell, Evan Kier, Dave Monson, Eric Papa, Mara Galvez, Pete Walls,
At this time, we'd like to open up the floor to any community members that would like to speak here and have a microphone. Can you speak more to the microphone, please? This way, sir.
So, Brandon Tavia, I am class in 2016, currently a second year JD MBA. Some of you have done this other than years ago. Remember that as awesome. This is a number of years. I am currently serving as the chairman of the board of the University of Central Music School. And I just want to take a moment to inform this assembly and all the present that we will be in the community forum on hate speech and disorderly conduct. From 3:15 to 4:45 p.m. tomorrow, auditorium. Facebook events and share certified present to attend, share the constituents, following out of the members who may be looking forward to a session with a great presentation about constructive improvement and activists, across the community, how any other community has included and be involved.
Are there any questions for anyone in the assembly?
Hi, Matt, it's okay. My question is about what communities you yourself or anybody on the CJC has personally reached out to, just as we don't, I don't want to reach out to communities you have already been in contact with.
So, interacting
with my friends.
I've reached out to a number of the interview groups in the law school, a number of interview groups in the University of Law, and the graduate members inside. As a member of the university, our office is for a credit for a lot of things in that regard. We've been generally trying to reach out to anyone who's involved. For reconstruction, very likely going to have the members of the group, and therefore, that means that we're looking forward to the project of the law. Our goal really is to.
So, I have two questions for you. The first is, will there be sort of, because this is a discussion that transcends the Will other members of the panel community be present? That's the first question. And the second question is, because this is during sort of an academic period for most undergraduate students, do you see yourself or the CJC hosting another forum that might be more accessible to students?
Okay. And
So you said the forum is on hate speech and the campus code of conduct. Will that discussion be more to primarily focus on hate speech in the campus code of conduct, or will it be open to all general community concerns about the code? Are there any other members of the assembly or the community that have any questions for their students? Are there any other members of the community that would like to speak at this time? Awesome. With that, we'll be closing up the meeting. Did you want to answer your question?
So first of all, I'd like to apologize for perhaps doing the conversation away from some other very important things that are happening today that I thought we were going to bring this up. Last Thursday, our parliamentarian sent us a heads up that we were going to have a quiz procedure after session. It was already passed at the law, according to us very calmly, expecting to be busted, but we postponed the quiz until the following week. In response to our request, or what I can only call our controllable emotions, he yelled at us, calling us all fucking stupid if they're not originally passing the exam. When I brought this up on a Slack channel, he did not apologize, and in fact, doubled down on his reaction, saying, I take great offense for not being committed to schedule and execute something that he should, that should take 20 minutes over the course of multiple months. I'd like to point out that it's he who canceled the exam in the first place, starting a job interview. He then expressed his disappointment with the grades, saying quizzes that were taken by members like the spring something like 90% of the question on the average from long. And he's right, I apologize. I have been way too busy meeting with the dean of my college, hosting student town halls, attending organization meetings, and actively talking around with my constituents to know that I'm only supposed to have one community forum, not two. I apologize for that. Lastly, and most importantly, those among us who like our parliamentarian's comments and thereby defended and condoned his actions, I respectfully state that you no longer have any group. Also, the minority members of this assembly unprofessional, again, particularly when it's not obviously an issue to you, it's coming from someone you deem acceptable.
Thank you. I would just like to give a speech reference. This is for it, Oh, okay, it's fine. But so if you let me know, we can. Yeah, very good. Next session. Good. 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 the public. All right, we'll go into announcements and reports. Representative Ball.
So I just want to give a quick update on the Tri-Council Literacy and Inclusion Plan that was introduced about a month ago now. So I reached out to the residents within Tri-Council, so MGLC, PHC, IFC, just kind of get a follow up from them on the plan. So keep in mind that this update is not everything that has happened since they first introduced the plan. This is kind of just a general overview to keep in mind. All of the initial and immediate action items that were first introduced when the plan came out have been completed. So all of the current outline in the initial announcement of the plan are to be found online. The Tri-Council is currently working on developing an individual member audit, which would essentially be a way of allowing for peers and chapter leadership to kind of hold members accountable for their actions in the chapter, since there doesn't seem to be a sectoral framework at the national level for addressing the actions of individual members. Additionally, Delta Series is being entirely revamped by Dr. Herb, who is the he's the executive director of campus and community engagement for the Office of Fraternity and Spirit of Life. So that's being entirely redone by the campus and community engagement office. But there will be some input as well. Also, all three councils within the Tri-Council have officially established a diversity and inclusion position to explicitly mention the inclusivity of the LGBTQ plus community, as well as a number of different affinity identities. Additionally, we're looking to provide a guide to introduce community discussions within two different councils and other organizations about diversity and inclusion. They have been in a number of Tri-Council has been a number of meetings with members of the criminal administration to kind of pressure them or try to get them to move towards taking certain actions. And they're continuing to, with administrators, to try and take action. There's only so much the administration to do in terms of addressing these individual concerns. Last two major things. There's going to be a week-wide online diversity training, which will be required for all individuals who plan to participate in the rush in the future. So that will be required for everyone. So I'm really glad to see that. And additionally, there will be a day-long IBQ diversity workshop for all incoming chapter presidents across Tri-Council, as well as all incoming Tri-Council officers. And that I can, and we'll be getting finalized tomorrow. But already, like, they've already set aside funds for all of this. So it's right here. That's all that I have. And definitely shout out to individuals from Tri-Council.
Next is your representative. Hi everyone. So the Consensual Relationship Policy Committee undergraduate representatives met with Dean Van Gone yesterday. And we talked about essentially like the logistics going forward with it. And in addition, there is a website on the Dean of Faculties. On the Dean of Faculties, there's a tab talking specifically about the Consensual Relationship Policy Committee, which looks at like main questions we're going to be looking at, and other schools, like policies on this issue. Basically, a whole wealth of knowledge on every question allows people to publicly comment and go to readings on it. That public comment is anonymous. You don't have to put your net ID or anything on there, have something specific. And then the representatives on the committee, there's going to be two separate meetings because the committee is so large, and both meetings are going to be focused on getting started the whole entire thing. The policy is hoped to be written by the end of this academic year, basically set in stone, hopefully. But for sure, all the representatives are willing and happy to reach out to everyone. If you have any concerns, get a Slack channel for the people join my Slack channel. And so, yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Joe.
I will go into bio reports. Okay, just ended up there. I have a motion to amend the agenda, place resolution 15 for resolution 14.
All in favor?
Maybe you want to do it.
Yeah, just. We can get to that. Yeah, I'm going to do this now. And so Dale's going to send the Slack, so I guess that it has.
Okay, so we have six bond reports, three from the previous week, three from this week, and then I'll also talk a little bit about SAFC. The bond report section will look like this pretty much for the rest of the semester. There will be three that we expect to approve, and then three that I'll mention. So I'll start with three from this week. We talked through class modules, basically, that are at 220, they requested 270. From 235. Does anyone have any questions about this? Comments or concerns?
I just have a motion to approve. All those in favor? Is it high? All those against? Abstentions? Alright, by 23-02, passes.
Okay, great. So now we're going to the Welcome Weekend Committee. The Welcome Weekend Committee is going to be at 232. They requested to, they originally requested more, but they updated their request because they're feeling too busy. Help fix that, and then we on the 240. So we gave them the updated, the full updated increase. So that's the motion.
All those in favor? All those against? Abstentions? Evan, Sarah? You guys, oh, you guys have got it? Okay, but it passes to 4-0-2-1.
If you have any questions or concerns about that, I'm sure you brought it up. So the orientation steering committee, this one's a little bit more unique. So I got an email on Tuesday night, basically from the advisor of the orientation steering committee. So before I go back, orientation steering committee is currently funded at 9:38. They requested to move up to 11:55 or to 11:53. We so that would be a 42-cent increase instead of $1.50 increase. So I got an email from the advisor Tuesday night, basically saying that she appreciates the time that we put in to making a position she makes in the do the same amount of programming, but over 6 days, instead of over just 4 days. Instead of increasing programming, quantum level of programming would spread out more, because that would increase the temperatures. I'm happy to share that report with the recommendations from Peggy, if you want to see that, but I specifically reached out to the co-chairs, and they do not want to make this decision, so we're good. Otherwise, we can.
How about the speakers list? Dale? So I was at the meeting, and I do want to say that the Appropriations Committee really did go through their requests and find ways to fund all programs. And one of the things that when we're funding any organization, this is one of the top funding organizations, so they get a large amount of money, and that really affects calculations more than anything else. What they wanted for their programming was $155,000. And most organizations essentially go all the number of students when they're doing estimates, but because they did that, they essentially were assuming that if they were funded 1153, they would get about that $155,000. But the amount that Appropriations Committee gave them actually would get them very close to the amount of money they want. So it wouldn't really affect their overall budget, even though we're funding them essentially a dollar less per student. And that's a huge increase to go up. We are still increasing the funding for Orientation Steering Committee if we pass this recommendation, in part because we helped make orientation longer. They're going to have two whole more days. That's a 50% increase. But they don't need to go up to $11 in order to fund everything that they want.
Okay.
Any dissent? All those in favor? Other questions? Do you need to dissent that? Okay. All right. You'll be able to.
I'm sorry, what was that?
What were the reasons for the game that you wanted to tell them how money to do? No. It's like there are more people who want to get tests. Jesse. So we can send it because the other question does the person who made the motion to vote withdraw the motion for the McCain? You maintain? Okay, there's a second. So one more vote. A vote to start going through all those in favor voting, raise your hand. All right. Okay, so we're going to go. All those in favor of approving? All those against? All abstentions? So that's 5.2, 1 to 2, it passes.
Okay, so now on to the new ones. So we also looked at three groups this Monday, International Student Union, Multicultural Letter Council, and so the EU group. The International Students Union requested to move up from 310 to 481. We decided to give them $3.90. That 80-cent increase is about $11,000 for the programming with. I have to say, I'm really proud of the committee for giving international students support at this time. So I'm going to report to them from you because it's a technical error with the Office of the Assemblies. But that's all I'm going to report. So, if you have any questions about how we reach that number, I'm happy to take those. This one. No, next one.
That's the table.
That's the table.
All right, all those in favor, please. All right, it's obviously a majority. That's what we're doing. Next is multicultural letter council.
So multicultural MGLC currently at 50 cents. They requested, well, they they initially requested $1, then they lowered it to 80 cents, and then they lowered it to 67 cents, and then we said, okay, we'll fund you at 67 cents. And I talked to Brianna about this, I think they seem, she's the president, I think they seem pretty excited about this. It's actually a percentage plus a very large increase. You know, this is about a 33% increase for them. So it's good news.
All those in favor? All right, this is the majority. It says for the slow media.
Okay, so slow media group is currently at 50 cents. I'm sorry, it's currently at 85 cents. They requested it to remain at 85 cents, but the appropriations committee recommended lowering it to 50 cents. I'm sorry. Right, so we recommend lowering it to 50 cents. From what I understand, they did not have this decision. Just to give people, you know, let's say the primary reason that we made this decision is they have a surplus that is like approximately equal to 100% of the income. So, like, they have a pile of cash, basically, the amount of money that they spend each year. So, like, there's just no reason for us to give them more money. But we did anyways. So we lowered their allocation to 50 cents. They're going to continue doing similar levels of programming. Still have the slope math magazine, but they have a little bit less income from the community. So if anyone has any questions about that now, we should have been down discuss this a little bit more.
The motion does then they can be executed as you get to the plan. Marco.
I just want to let y'all know that we'll be not took into consideration like their magazines and like the music things that they do. They have like a Spotify account, they have magazines, they have like a website and all that, and like we just thought that it'd be very wise for them to send their like money that they have. And so like yeah, we could just like let them because you want to do them like I can spend too much time talking about it. so yeah, I think we made the right decision and like talk next week and maybe next week with the
I also just like want to publicly say just so that it's on the record, so a couple years ago, we like specifically asked them not to give out shop classes, and like they didn't stop giving away shop classes,
and they put it in as classwork.
Yeah. So that did not help.
Good. All right. That's TJ. There's an emotional table for a second. Sense? See that?
Me more for
you decide?
Okay.
Do you make any motion? Yes? Alright, we're gonna vote to vote. All those in favor of voting for Mr. Blackness. Okay. So all those in favor of giving away this. Mr. Blackness high. All those against? You have to vote. All those against? Abstentions? Vote 7-5. Does not go through the podcast. Okay, that's a good one. Yes.
It's a podcast.
All right, we'll go into SASC. Right, Dave, do you want to look back on the first?
Yeah, so SASC, largest organization on Byline, currently funded at $94.13. They requested to move up to $100. That's a very large increase.
I'm gonna limit this to 5 minutes. Okay, I'm gonna limit this to 5 minutes.
Okay, so basically, the reason that SASC got paid in is because the Appropriations Committee does not want to make a decision about how much to fund the SASC. We know like what their guidelines are going to be, because you shouldn't. The thinking is you shouldn't fund an organization at given the current guidelines, they can put in the change the guidelines, and the current guidelines like require us to pay out tons more money because of the new student code. So I've been talking with Terry Ector, Joseph Vito, obviously Joshua and Joe, Terry and Joe, Terry and Joseph Vito are okay with this. Joe, Joshua, the co-chairs, are probably not as happy that we came with this. It's okay, because honestly, this organization needs to have its guidelines changed because the new student order growth is unsustainable. It's running at about 5% per year in new student orders. That's about what we've been for 40 years. So I just want to let you guys know that we don't plan on making a recommendation for how much from SASC. So we couple that with language about how specifically we get guidelines to prevent this growth. You have questions about that? I'm happy to take those around the wall.
First, let's see businesses in the video.
That's what I want to point out to you guys when you're thinking about your decision. Eventually, we do recognize that it's incredibly important. Of course, on this campus, especially if you bring this to about 50% or 30% of the students have gotten the AP, which is huge. We recognize that you want to maybe the same thing at the same time, as Jay said.
Yeah, we have 3 minutes left in this discussion. I don't know if it's a good time to bump it. Yeah.
So I totally agree with you from wanting to limit the growth, but I actually think it's not a good idea to hold back the recommendations so you have better language guidelines. And I think that that is important. We should pass the recommendation this semester, assuming you don't want guidelines. Because even if we do pass the guidelines, we'll have no idea what the effect of those changes would be. That'll take a long time. I think the recommendation will have to be based on what we know today and what's going to be happening today.
But I have a.
So we did take that consideration. And
exactly.
And right now we have a number that we might fund them by, but we're working to committee, even though we're meeting before 30 of Monday, but after that we're gonna stay after and work on the words and everything for that changes, and then it will be done by this semester. I think that's like one of our biggest priorities on the
it's nice to serve.
Yeah.
Get a mic. Awesome.
Yeah, so basically, the reason we want to put this off is we want to have it like, put in an important position because it really makes no sense that we're going to have to change the guidelines. But also, hopefully, another professor probably most likely will. And if any of you are interested, every week from 8 to 9 on Mondays in City Hall, we'll be working on this. So if you have any interest whatsoever in knowing what's going on or contributing, you're welcome to come.
So just to clarify that, the Appropriations Committee meeting is not before 3 p.m. to p.m. on Mondays.
Okay, thank you. We want to be closing discussion on this. We want to move on to new business, resolution to the next question. Oh, yes, go ahead.
I have to say, which orders are going to come next.
Yeah,
that's probably the whole thing. Next up, we're doing the empathy assistance and control surface. Here's for the pavement and cornhole cinema. That's in 163 Day Hall. So at 4:35 and 6:30 respectively. Let me know if you have any questions. I look forward to seeing all of you there.
Thank you, Kate. All right, well, the sponsors of those are going to be the before the sponsors begin, members of the community, if you have at any point questions or comments to make, Sarah will be around to speak with us.
Okay, cool. So before I start, I just want to thank all the international students who came here today to show their support and some of the students. Okay, so basically, as we know, we are aware of international students are the only applicants that are subjected to media aware policy on criminal admissions. That means they're increasing race in their admissions decision. What that means is that international students are effectively disincentivized from applying to financial aid on the application. So it's like in their interest to show that they have as much money as possible and they don't need financial aid. The reason for that is that the total financial aid budget for international students is capped and does not accommodate for any fluctuations, whereas domestic aid adjusts both on the individual and aggregate level to accommodate for your need. And of course, that happens because domestic admissions are in blind, so the university can't really accurately predict how much you will actually give out. Now, the problem is that if international students are not awarded financial aid upon their initial formal application, they can never apply and wherever it's no matter what the circumstances. So if the family goes bankrupt, like if their parents die, they can still not reapply. That's something. So what we're proposing is twofold. The first result is that we basically want to see evidence supporting Cornell's decision to resort to a new aware policy. They make a theoretical argument saying, like, we don't want to accept international students and not be able to support them because it's very frustrating, we think it's unethical to do so. So we want to get income, okay, cool. But we want to see like some sort of empirical evidence justification for that. As far as accommodating for international emergency aid goes, we are proposing two solutions. The first of those is using leftover funds for domestic financial aid, because presumably, I mean, Cornell can accommodate for additional needs of domestic students while coming out to the same for international students. Now, from what Mara has told me in the meetings with Lombardi, is that Cornell actually goes into their endowment to take out additional funds.
Endowments, right? And so these schools don't take out money from their endowments, more so they use the returns on their endowments to provide financial aid for all students. What we do, on the other hand, is not necessarily take out funds from our endowment, but we use our working budget to supply domestic student aid, which fluctuates, changes from year to year. And each year we spend approximately $250 million on domestic students alone. And that can fluctuate from year to year, but the thing with international students is that it is capped. And their endowment for financial aid is significantly smaller, so their returns are smaller. So the amount of aid that they can potentially get year by year grows at a substantially lower rate than domestic aid does.
Thank you for clarifying. Exactly. And so I guess like that option is much less likely. The second option we're proposing is to set up an emergency fund sponsored by an online form, for instance, in
of Financial Aid, the Office of Alumni Affairs, President Paul, President Lombardi, and Vice President Laura Spitz, to make this a reality. It is certainly not possible. A similar fund actually exists at Harvard. It's called the Vivian Allen International Student Emergency Funds. And international students facing emergency circumstances can draw from that. Now, obviously, the administration will say that we don't have as much money as Harvard. You know, it's going to cost a lot of money, it's going to cost a lot of effort, although it's going to be quite as much, honestly. But in a recent meeting with trustees, President Paul said, well, Cornell wants to be a university for the 21st century, going to be a premier institution. I see no reason why Cornell cannot strive to become the world's best university for international students from all socioeconomic backgrounds. So that's what we're really striving for. And so I call all members of the student assembly, every single one of you, and also members of the international community here today to provide names and contact information for alumni who may believe you might be interested in donating to this fund. So I've seen obviously making efforts to reach out to alumni, and we're hoping to cooperate with the Office of Alumni Affairs on this. Obviously, there's a lot of complications, like an alumni will not want to donate like $10,000 to the student down in council. Okay, and just to top us off and really illustrate the gravity of the issues international students face with financial aid, I'd just like to read a statement that was submitted to us by RACA graduate. A few weeks before my high school graduation, my father passed away after a long and painful battle with cancer. I had been accepted into Cornell's 2017 class a few months before, and my father, worried about my acceptance, had assured me that he was ready to support me throughout my time at college. My father left no will behind, so shortly after his death, the bank swiftly froze all his accounts and assets and informed my family that we would have to go to a court order to gain access to his assets, as they were now tied to the state. This was especially frustrating for us because at this time, Cornell had asked us to provide proof of finances, such as bank statements and their assets, before sending the I-20 document that I would need to apply for an F-1 student visa. My family emailed the admissions office, detailing our sudden and painful loss and our current financial situation. And we also sent the frozen account statements and our plan to access the funds by going to court. However, the admissions office told us they couldn't accept the frozen account statement as proof of finances, and that they could not offer me any financial aid. To top it off, they told me to defer my admission until the next year to give myself time to sort out my financial troubles. I was heartbroken, of course, and it felt like I had been dismissed without any hopeful alternative. Fortunately for us, my late father's employer sent us his death benefits, which helped us ensure tangible proof of finances. When I finally received my I-20, it came with a disclaimer that Cornell will never offer me any financial aid throughout my 4 years, even if my financial situation changes again at any point. I remember reading that statement with so much sadness, but also with the realization that Cornell was just another capitalist institution. We did not care about the well-being of international students. Evidence of this was seen earlier in the semester in funding for this foreign student employment program, which helps many international students stay afloat with school debt. Cornell needs to do better for its international student population, and I am proud of ISU's efforts to pass a resolution to create an emergency aid fund for international students who did not receive financial aid prior to matriculation. Okay. So again, these are not my words, but the words of an effective student, and I hope that really goes to show how big this issue is, and how international students see the university's efforts. Thank you.
So thank you, showed up. Once again, if anyone of the community members has a question or a comment, or anything, just raise your hand and start with you. We got the first speaker's list is ours.
Yes, Andrea, thank you guys for coming up with the resolution. I think this one is extremely important, especially as an international student who's been affected by this personally. Somebody who Cornell, first when I applied, Cornell told me that I could apply for financial aid the year after I got early, I could apply for the decision cycle. After I got early, they told me that I was all over the field of my grade, and that the information that I was receiving their arms was incorrect, but that did not fix the problem. I've reached out, not just myself, my parents have reached out multiple times and met with financial officers over the span of 4 years. Still nothing has been done. Even this summer, my family is facing a financial problem. I was once again informed that there is no possible way of ever receiving financial aid for now. This is extremely disheartening, not just to me, but my family and many other students who face a similar struggle. I think it's easy to sort of forget that, you know, as students, we all have this burden to deal with, and international students have been consistently discriminated against on this basis. And it's very, very hard because we have, it's something we deal with every single day. And because we're even further and further away from our families, that emotional stress is even harder to deal with. So I would urge you guys to support this because this is extremely important, not just for me or for the student that was previously affected, but for the international student community, which is a huge chunk of the ground.
Before we move on to the next speaker, I'd like to remind that separation is not at the laptop. So, next is over. Yeah, I would like to first echo Harris and say thank you guys for bringing this. This is obviously important. I think this administration has systematically marginalized moving resources out of the international student community, which is unacceptable. I think there is no reason that students, domestic students, should be allowed to apply for mainline admissions and international students have to worry about the financial situation just to get into college, which is already so stressful. I think there's no reason that international students need to feel like second-class members of their own student body, because we've all had to deal with the administration as individual students, and we know how to deal with it. So I fully support this resolution, and I hope other members of the body do as well. I think one specific question I have is, I think it's good that we've called out specific members of the administration in the resolution, and the onus on them. Has there been any discussion about creating a working committee so that there is further accountability placed on them for helping finance this? Because I want to make sure that there is long-term sustainability of such a committee. That's TJ.
So we have successfully set up a representative like financial international student committee with Laura Spitz. So we have representatives from all the major international constituencies, like 60 people in total. And so we're planning to work on that there. ICE is also making efforts internally to reach out to different international clubs, like around 30 around the world, and contacting them through those. But obviously, again, we rely on cooperation with the administration and then reaching out to Congress and Fund Affairs. So our guard with them, however, other minority communities that may have been slow to respond and it's been difficult to keep them in the past.
So, first of all, thank you for sponsoring this and working on this, and also thank you all of our community members who came out to demonstrate how important this issue is. So, something you started to say to everybody is like, how much work does it seem like is still ahead for interacting with the administration? Like, I know that you guys have started with that communication with the administration, but just to get a sense of where we're at in terms of how hard we as a player can push in the future, the afterwards. Where do you think the administration stands right now? But set up. And then additionally, you mentioned like urging or like creating maybe separate goals for the endowment, and maybe it's just creating some pool for endowment. Would that separate pool only be used for emergencies, or would like, that separate pool also be used for general financial aid for international students?
So we have been in communications with a lot of members with the financial aid office. One of the things to keep in mind is that international student financial aid actually comes out of the admissions office. It's not done out of the financial office, which is kind of just make sure this situation is out. But another thing that we really look at too is the financial as well. So if you look at line 35, what I mentioned about this, is that 89% of the scholarships and grants are done directly by the government. So that means that 89% of them will go financially, which means like everything that's not on loans, so if there's enough money that's actually going to be used, that's through Cornell itself. Another thing that came up during the discussions was the fact that essentially in our conversations with the administrators, they said that this happens so frequently for domestic students that they don't even worry about it, right? So the thing is, even if this happens frequently, it has such a high severity for the students impacted, which is why we're here today. But based on those conversations, it's
and that way we can take out money for financial aid from the returns on the endowment and not out of our working budget. And in terms of creating an endowment, I don't know if it was Chris asked for a conversation with the SA member a few days ago, but in order to create an endowment and work with the office of local affairs, you have to fundraise approximately $100,000 a year. So that is what lies ahead in terms of student advocacy and us also working with administration. And I'm glad to say that they are currently being very cooperative, but we want to kind of maintain that relationship so that we work together and get to that point.
And so the endowment is definitely one option. And if we go back to the other option, that's essentially online for the game. But because this happens so frequently for international students, but there is that security, the goal, one of the options is to have international students included in domestic student accelerating circumstances. So we essentially want the opportunity for international students to have access to this financial aid regardless of student.
I have a question. Well, I'll just answer that because I mean, didn't answer Jason most of the question, but like 100,000 members seems like a shit ton of money. But however, given like the mix, like the number of very successful international alumni we have, and the fact that there is actually a scholarship in place, this I think is called the Tata Scholarship that actually funds two international students to come to Canada every year. Like, there's definitely interest by international alumni. I really anticipate. On and contribute to this, and I really think we can go like actually far beyond $100,000 for you.
So can you also go into more detail about the fund that Harvard has? Is it that they have an endowment for financial in general that international students also tap into, or is it an endowment specifically for international students?
So, to my understanding, this the Vivian Allen International Student Emergency Fund is specifically for international students who face like unanticipated. Like financial need. So basically, international students in emergencies. And this was like originally founded by my alumni like way back in the late 30s. And after she passed away, this was like incorporated into Harvard's general endowment for international students, specific part of it that is just dedicated to these types of cases. And so, yeah, well, and Harvard is also not black, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Just want to say, as always, ISU does a fantastic job always making sure they advocate for international students accurate for now. They do it not only for undergraduates, but I now know that you're looking into graduates and advocates for graduates. And Chris, as I mentioned to you, I would love to see this through to see hopefully UA to kind of make sure that graduate students and graduate professional students can also have access to this. That number will probably be getting small, but just making sure that everyone. More advocacy that ISU with the rest of the international student communities by doing for the rest of this academic year. I'm really excited to know that every member of this community is very supportive of every effort that international students have.
I was going to say that we're really making efforts to work with grad students, and obviously most international students sometimes are actually grad students, but they face like very unique issues different from those that undergraduates face. So actually working with international grad students right now to set up teams within ISU explicitly dedicated to dealing with issues affecting international graduate students.
This is Jalen.
Yes. So as an international student myself who is on my foreign visa, I just want to remind generally like how much burden that this puts on international students. We constantly have to worry about not only our grades and being in school and like studying, but we also have to worry about immigration and the Trump administration just doesn't help. So we constantly have to worry about finances and also fulfilling requirements to keep our visa and like to have our rights to exist in this country. So I really applaud our representatives for bringing this to the SMP and I move for everyone. So if anyone from the community would like to speak, like, feel free at any time.
Switch your hand. So that exhausts the first speakers list. We do have a second speakers list. Something else I'll go over for the second speakers list.
Question
to
this.
All right.
want to hear his vote in the assembly. All those in favor? Agree fit. This is obviously more than about 2 years after doing this, so this is the same. Is there a motion to? Okay, I need to reset. Let me reset. Okay, I'll see you reset. Do you make any motion? Okay, so the person making the motion is the person who says speech list.
I'd also just like to highlight that this the fact is that international students have been consistently discriminated against. This is just one of a series of things that have been discriminated against over the past few years. First the policy became defined, then work studies removed. Just because that one thing has been altered again, in a quick decision, I just want to reiterate the fact that something like this could happen again. Pressuring the administration to make sure that international students have just the kind of equal treatment that domestic students have. And additionally, often like 44 in this resolution is also really important because we still haven't gotten proper justification as to why the policy was made to be aware in the first place. And I think that's really important to see exactly the administration is doing, exactly their mindset is at when it comes to international students. Because if we don't know what the administration is doing in the first place, how can we trust them to make any future decisions that could impact the
just really quickly, one of the issues that the agency was funding for was between the top schools that we never specified would be on a task force to help look into funding. So a point of information I wanted to ask was that we could maybe making an amendment to add like formally that we were to create a task force and then put names of who would be on it so it doesn't just get passed around and then we come. So before we first answers, does anyone do you make any motion? Okay, so there's been a motion to vote. Is there a second? Any dissent? All right, we'll go to voting. All those in favor? Raise a high. All those against? Abstentions? The chair, two different abstentions. So by 24-021, this passes. I'd like to ask you this question. Members are coming. No, this is a recommendation by this body. But yeah. Thank you. Next, we'll go into resolution 14. Just the end of
basically, this resolution is exciting to transparency of WCM
basically by the charter, which only one of the 6 year proceedings and changes as far as pushing for that transparency that we want from the administration. We know that there are labor abuses that's been covered heavily by the actually, the reason I've been focusing on this now, five other things that actually that person had contacts at Education City told me that I can remember. So I'll take questions. Otherwise, it's a continuation of the resolution and pushes for transparency. Yeah.
My first list of this is a lot. Do you also want to forward it to the Board of Trustees and then move to the charter?
Thank you, Rizal.
But for the rest.
So when I complete this, it just gets passed. Can you speak to that?
For patrons, I didn't go to the status of the document is in offices of insurers until the process of the comment information is not.
Usually, well, I know that usually, unless someone else owns this, usually our foundation prefers something on confidentiality and privacy. But UCU has released their charter, their public school. I think UBC reported that it's not the charter's public school. Specifically, pushing, I think it's interesting to look at the tutorials because it's a significant more money from the foundation. In that sense, it's affecting the university. The foundation, which is tied to the Royal Family, actually has a problem with being able to put mega budgets and research and stuff is based on the priorities and they need to all walk in touch with property from the university.
Yeah, and also, I'm sure just this research, if it is actually confidential, then the person will respond to that. Next is room. So what is your conversation today with, so I see a co-facilitator that was the international on here. What is your conversation with you with that? So other organizations that have seen this?
Has had access to the document, reach out to her for other clarifications and comments and collaborations. She commented on
that. Okay. Next is DJ.
So, I don't want to start getting into this, but I think it might be good to add an amendment to say, make this document public and also have it directly distributed to all members of the Board of Trustees and all members of the Board of Council. It's like, can you hear me?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Basically, I would strongly encourage to make a friendly amendment to have document directly distributed to all members of the Board of Trustees and all members of the University Council, which is the body of record of the trustees. It's like 400 people, and it could just like invite and create awareness and not info to alumni and direct contact with the trustees on this issue. And which can be more direct, which can make it public for the administration to put that on the website. Do you mean this resolution specifically, or do you mean the original charter? Sorry, original charter.
Yes, but wouldn't the trustees be the ones with that? I don't know, I just have to order to that.
He suggested that
are the trustees the one with the charter right now, or would there be no access to the charter?
I'm just going to
wouldn't it be good then to kind of like make an amendment to have the trustee gain access to each other where you have access to each other?
Yeah, so that's experts on the speakers list as far as?
Yeah, I just have a quick sort of clarification. So when you say make public, public on sort of what sort of forum are you looking for? Like, public to?
I mean, as of now, it's not publicly accessible. Only one university staff has been able to do mutation and so on, accessible. As far as my language, I don't know if they would be able to get some. I don't mind so long as it's techniques and make more informed decisions on making more defensive inside than organizing systems. So, what's new? First,
thanks, sir.
Yeah. So, we should add after the word public and the regulation to all members of the board of trustees, all members of the board. You can also make this recommendation.
They already have
a board of trustees, but the industry is from the UT Council.
So do you want to add just the folks that doesn't seem to be perhaps I think it direct me to just the chair to be more effective?
Motion to table, there's a lot of nuances. I understand you want amendments, but there's a lot of changes that need to be made. And I think that there's a lot of better way to make approaches to this. And I think that little things like the trustee discussion, you can do that off on your own free time, and you can do that separately instead of having everyone vote on these little small word changes. And so I think we should table.
All right, so there's a second set. Alright, we're sort of. Oh, I guess there's a. Alright, so there's a second, we'll go into, voting to table, we're going to vote to table, all those who take the table.
Wait, wasn't there a dissent?
There's no dissent. Where's the aye? I will say yes. Third, second, okay, so. Alright, so it's the table. Thanks, Jesse. Next, we'll go into Resolution 16.
Yeah. So, anyone that's interested in helping Jesse out with this, or anyone that has any comments, I would recommend that Jesse make a Slack channel or someone can make a Slack channel, I don't care. But have those conversations offline and organize the meetings so that you can. Create a more substantive resolution moving forward.
Or at the very least, for clear language and amendments you want to make to the meeting next week.
Alright, floor. Can you speak into the mic, please? I'm sorry, so this room is acoustic, it's not going to speak directly to the mic.
So this resolution has been prompted by my experiences in some STEM and social science courses, but it's not necessarily essentially the way meeting grades are approved currently. It's solely by the meeting grade of all people involved in a single course by course number. So meeting grades on transcripts are reflected by differences. Inherent with different instructors and sections or things that. So I think it's essentially more accurate, more dependable information for record information to officers, official employees,
So I'm really aiming for accuracy here because there are some professors who are good, there are some professors who can't teach.
rating systems are different, their players are different, like everything can be different from like process to process. So that's kind of limited to the ideas
I also like to want to emphasize that this is in no way supposed to be an attack on like front of faculty or any instructor on campus. The sole purpose of this is to reduce inequity and make sure that there's specific criteria. And because like in here, we have 10 different instructors for a course, not all of them are graded exactly the same fashion. So like, this is just make sure that it's equal and that transcripts accurately reflect the ability of students and performance.
Alright, so I actually have a question. So just to get a clarification, so I understand this correctly. So isn't that you guys recommending that on our transcripts, if I'm enrolled in a course versus or I'm enrolled in a course where I'm in one section, but there's another section for another student, they have different reading grades based on that section.
So all the dash by one section numbers.
Motion to amend. You have to state your amendment before I can present it.
Okay, come on. On line 24, remove ending structures to see in English. This title one is saying, like, remarks on the interesting things that might come from different ethnic backgrounds.
Okay, I just want to comment on this. Like, I'm a transfer student myself, there's a lot of international students. This is like in no way attacking the ability, knowledge, or capabilities of instructors from the classroom in English, but it's the fact that there are some teachers, and I think it's unfortunate, the ability in English just is far below the knowledge of the subject they want to teach, and they're not able to convey the knowledge that they have. And it's too late, like, this is a problem. This is in no way attack on the takes who are not like perfectly speakers of English, but it does impact quality.
I withdraw my motion. Okay. What are the speakers then?
That's his name.
My please. Okay, so my concerns is that sections for humanities courses and social science courses should be treated differently from STEM courses because they are different. And there's no differentiation in the students and this resolution. So that's what I'm saying. Next is Joe.
Yeah, I think there are some nuances that are missing in this resolution, especially because in some STEM fields, like, there aren't, like, your TA is not reading it, it's actually an undergraduate grader, so, like, you're not going to get the same effect essentially. In addition, it doesn't say what, like, current students, like, does that act, like, does your sector. Does this apply to me for my freshman year and then my school go? It doesn't make like a lot of sense in the transcript, honestly. So I'm kind of like I feel like I get the intent, however, I think there needs to be more nuance applied to the resolution as well.
That's good. First of all,
I think directly on the second last clause,
right before religion. Okay, so I think that this resolution is like 99% of the way there. This is one amendment that I don't want. And then I think that we should. But basically, like, I don't know if everyone gets what's going on right here, but basically the problem is like different, some courses have different teachers teaching them. And because of that, the grades like might actually be different. Like, if I'm taking like intro micro with one professor, and someone else is taking intro micro with another professor, like, if they fall in the same semester, the median grade could like actually be different, but it's all moving together. And so they're judged against people who actually like literally took a different course than you, and that's happened in multiple lines. I don't know if that only happened in the social sciences, but I've also taken courses in the humanities where that happens. I think either way, like, it just makes sense to have people who are like in different sections, like have the grade, like the median grade listed on the transcript for that section. So I don't think like that's the only issue that I think this is purporting to address, and I think that like it's pretty much ready to go. I have an amendment that I want to make, and then just
is like, again, I've always this before, in principle, I don't think we should go on resolution of the data introduced. But so here's what I'm gonna move with the amendment line 30 to remove the words the faculty senate direct the, and then on line 31 remove the word to. So that it would read recommends that. So recommends that the university registrar report review dates on transcripts by section. We don't need to ask for that. So we can do it, we can ask for consent.
All right, all those in favor? All right, now it reads, see the result of the student assembly recommends that the university registrar report meeting rates on classroom by section. In the sun? None? Alright. It's been adopted. Brandon, you want to speak?
I just wanted to say that I was in there.
So, obviously, that major, pre-med, and I think a lot of content in a lot of different sections. And just something to note is like a lot of those courses are actually per based on TA and they actually at the end of the semester alter ratings under TA, but one issue with doing it based on section, I think, could be that you know that it's going to be a different section. So one section A and B minus and B and one may have an A minus B, but that just managed to time you of the class. Other things, because in courses that are 400 people or 500 people that are in our curve, looking at a small sample of 15 people is generally not a good representation to come up with a median.
Alright, all those in favor, it's not this is more questions. Alright, assess on the table, thank you guys. Alright guys, we have an exhausted agenda. Is there a motion for the chair? Yeah. Alright, that's our turn. Tonight. Alright, now we'll go into executive session. Can all community members please it's the room to come in.
If the committee chair is not ready to be, it would be great if you could join us for a few minutes. Assuming, yeah, unless no one objects, I'm inviting the two committee chairs in the room to sit with us for a moment. If they want, Alexis and Nathaniel, you guys can stay or not.
I'm good, how are you?